Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, John. Be with me for a moment.
Turn up.
Welcome, everybody, to a Applause Radio Show. I'm Joanne Barton, and...
Yeah, I'm John Arricchio. How are you guys doing out there?
Good. Welcome, everybody. Tonight we have a great show. We've got a great musician, John Ford Coley from England Dan and John Ford Coley, and actor-magician, yep, I said magician, Dan Frischman, and we'll find out more about that. Before we start, since we have John on the phone, let's just say thank you to our sponsors, the Hyde Bar and Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey, Precious Memory Video, Kittnersville, Pennsylvania, KWV Wines in South Africa, Tees for the Times in Clifton, New Jersey, and Syntech Productions in Lenoka Harbor, New Jersey. Mr. John Ford Coley, how are you, sir?
I'm very good. How are you tonight?
Good. Thank you so much,
John,
for joining us. It is a pleasure, sir.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
Oh, please. It's nice to have you. You kidding? I'd really love to see you tonight, but, you know, we're here.
Wait a minute. They told me this was going to be a racquetball clinic. I mean, am I at the wrong spot? I mean,
no, this is the fat farm. This is you're at the wrong place entirely.
Oh, man, not again.
Not again. Well, John, thank you. I can't even say thank you. I mean, your music has definitely touched me throughout my life. I mean, you guys, you ruled the 70s. And for those who don't know, which I find hard to believe, John is the part of the duo of England Dan and John Ford Coley. And they had some amazing hits. I'd really love to see you tonight. Oh, my God. What's the other ones? Jesus, help me out here. Don't tell me. Nights are forever.
I tell you love is the answer, and nights are forever without you. You didn't hear it from me.
Okay. Right. Thank you. I have it right here. I just couldn't get there in time. You know, I got to tell you, I don't know if I'm the only person, but I'd really love to see you tonight. I could have swore you were saying, I'm not talking about the linen. Did anybody ever say linen or...
I have had so many things with that. I mean, there's a couple that I can't repeat in flat company. You know, it kind of gets like that. But, I mean, I mess with people when I play.
Yeah.
I just say, look, straight from the horse's mouth, I've had so many controversies about this. It goes like this. I'm not talking about millennia. So, you know, and then I just keep it kind of fun for me. Sometimes I'll say Lennon, sometimes I'll say M&M's. I mean, you know, just
the M&M's, good idea.
It just depends on what kind of mood I'm in, you know.
Yeah, because when I was younger, when we heard it, I was like, Lennon. So he doesn't want to change the linen, and he's not going to change her mind. Because Lennon actually made sense. Because, you know, you don't want to change her linens, you know.
I think that song was probably much bigger than it should have been simply because there was such a controversy on what we were saying. Mm. And I mean, I'm a Texas boy, so I mean, it was as clear as Mississippi mud to me. I speak that way. So
right, it came out the way you speak.
Yeah, I mean, it was actually in Texas where I came from. It's kind of like, you know, a friend of mine said it was the Southern accent. Texas accent was about the only option I had.
Now, the both of you were from Texas. How did Dan get the name England? How did that
Dan used to, back when the Beatles came out, Dan was a funny guy. I mean, he was always doing something that was outlandish. He was very quick. had a great sense of humor. So when the Beatles came out, and all, you know, the English accent, he began walking around attempting to mimic the English accent.
No,
if you heard a Texan try to mimic,
I was just going to say that.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that. I can only imagine a Texan trying to imitate a Brit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when we toured with Elton John, we were in England. He took us there for a month. And so here I'm giving my best effort to cop an English accent. And Nigel Olsen, the drummer, looked at me and he said, "You sound like a damned Australian." You know? So in other words, I'm not doing it right. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, that's so funny. Well, I had no idea that Dan was brothers with Jim from Seals and Crofts. I had no idea.
He was the younger brother of Jimmy Seals.
So who had the first hit, you guys or Seals and Crofts?
No, Seals and Crofts. Jimmy was about probably 8-9 years older than Dan.
Yeah.
And so actually Jimmy was the one who came up with the name of England Dan and John Ford Coley. We were called Colin Whalen at the time.
Ah.
So we're looking for something unique. And I tell you the truth, it was the greatest gift to me because using my name like that
right.
allowed me to go on and do things. And if I say the name, you can see people's wheels kind of start to turning, trying to connect how they heard that name before.
Right, right.
So,
Any stories behind the songs that how they came about? Are they anything personal? Nights Are Forever and I'd Really Love to See You and, you know, Love Is the Answer. Any personal?
Well, you know, a couple of years ago, I wrote a book called Backstage Cast, and it's not about drug sex and rock and roll. It's just about the ridiculous things that went on the road, you know. So I've got all kinds of stories about those songs. Like, Really Love to See You Tonight, Dan and I didn't want to do the song. We kind of wanted to be known as singer-songwriters in our own right. So we had written 3 albums, and I think all of them collectively sold about $1.98 worth, you know, on A&M. So they asked us to do this song. Our manager asked us to do this song. And Dan and I both kind of hem-hawed, thought it was more of a feminine song. And they said, no, just try it. So we did this song. And son of a gun, if it didn't take off. Parker McGee was the writer on the song.
Right.
And I'm still kind of hot under the collar because we're having to do somebody else's song. Well, then I saw the first royalty check. And I found myself going, Parker, buddy, hey, where else you got me? And then he actually wrote Nights Are Forever Without You, too. And probably the funniest song, I mean, the funniest story on that particular song was, and it kind of opened up Backstage Pass, but Dan and I split up, and I was playing in California. And after I finished playing, this really nicely dressed lady comes up, kind of all in black, lawyerly looking, kind of corporate looking. And she had one of the old LPs. And so she took me by the hand, got kind of close to me, and in a really sweet, gentle voice, she said, I want you to know, Nights Are Forever Without You was my fiance's and my favorite song. He says, he proposed to me to the song. We danced to the song. We loved to the song.
Yeah.
We did just about everything to that song, you know. And I'd heard it so many times. And I just politely said, well, that's nice to hear. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Honest to goodness, that woman's head morphed into Satan right in front of me. Got about an inch away from my nose and squeezed my hand so tight I thought it was a hydraulic press. And then in a voice I didn't recognize, she said, and then that blankety blank so-and-so left me.
That's
your song ever.
It's not your fault.
It's kind of like, you know, the only thing that I could do was say, you know, it was like, well, cool. You know, it's like, what do you think of it?
Right. Oh, my God. Well, you're obviously, you're touring with folks? Well, not right now, unfortunately.
Not right now.
Yeah, but how are you doing during this crazy time that we're going through?
Well, you know, it's really interesting because I study a lot of alternative medicine. I've dabbled in a lot of different things.
Oh.
And so, you know, my first response was, you know, everybody's just staring the hell out of you. Nobody's teaching you how to boost or strengthen your immune system. You know,
right.
We're just going to take care of those things. So that was always something that I was trying out. And I called my daughter, and my daughter's 24. She took off and went to Kentucky to this thing. So I talked to her almost every day, and one day I said, how you doing up there? She said, I I've been up here for 6 weeks. I'm doing everything that they're telling me I'm supposed to do, and I'm really in a mood to just kind of kill somebody. Mm. And I said, huh. I said, I've been out every day breaking all the rules the government set. I've probably broken a few God set, too. And, you know, I'm 71, and I'm in a hell of a lot better shape than you are, especially emotionally. Because I've been going out every day. I've been doing, I mean, they're not telling me what to do, you know. It's
no,
like,
no, I don't understand why people are making a big deal. They're not telling you not, you can't go out. Just go out safely. I'm going out, too. I wear a mask and gloves if I need to.
I won't wear a mask. I went into a store the other day. And I was going to get some vitamins, and the lady said, we're requesting that everybody wear a mask, so I will give you a mask. And I said, tell you what, how about I go shop somewhere else? And I just left.
Okay, all right.
I'm sorry. If you want to do that, that's fine. I don't have it. I haven't had it. So, I mean, even when I was in the Philippines a couple of years ago and the SARS virus was going on at one time, and another time the avian flu was going on.
Right.
So there's people with masks, and I had people say, why aren't you wearing a mask? And I said, because I'm a Psalms 91 kind of guy. No plague comes near my house. And, of course, they didn't understand that. But still, I'm sorry. I just fear to me. Is having a lot more faith in the enemy than it is in God. So I
right.
just kind of leave it there.
All right. Well, then you're doing okay then. That's great.
Doing okay. I'm still not any
John, I'm really glad that you said that because we need more people like you who aren't afraid of their own shadow and are willing to go about their lives in a normal way, and I applaud you for that.
Well, like I said, you don't have to be afraid. Just be careful, you know.
Well, the problem is that people are afraid, and I wish that they weren't. It's just a simple matter of education. But if you don't have the information to start with, I mean, simple things like zinc and C and vitamin D. And one of the things that's really overlooked is foot reflexology. Just go in and Google, you know, immune system reflexology, and it'll show you quite a number of places to manipulate on your feet and your hands and your chest. And it's a simple thing. It's just we're not getting that information out.
Right. Well, let's say this craziness wasn't going on. Where would you be right now? Touring? Who would you be touring
with? I tour all the time. I do a lot of things by myself.
I was going to ask you now that Dan is no longer with us, who plays with you now as a duo?
Well, nobody plays as a duo. When I go out, I play piano and guitar.
Nice.
I tell a lot of jokes. I tell a lot of stories. I play some new songs, you know, because I've got a couple of things out. One called Eclectic that was done about 2 years ago. And then I just recently did one called Live, Long Way Home, Live in Israel and Los Angeles. So, it's a live album. And, I mean, I go out with Ambrosia a lot, and we play with Peter Beckett from Player and Stephen Bishop, Gary Wright sometimes, Ralph Stewart, Elliot Lurie. I mean, we've got a number of people. Bill Champlin, he was in Chicago.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great players that are still out there. So I'll get I'll play four songs, and Ambrosia backs everyone up. I'm working as much now as I was back then. Which is really, it's really good.
Yeah, that's great. Oh, I wish I had known you had some new music. You could have sent it over. We could have played it for you here.
Oh, heck, I'll still send it to you.
Oh, please do. Yeah, we'll definitely play it. So now,
hey, John.
It's all different now, you know, because the thing is, it used to be like, you know, the music that you're accustomed to with English Danny and John Portfolio. But, I mean, this new stuff for me is like Lithuanian disco polka, you know. So I hope that you can kind of handle that. You know?
Well, around in the 70s, it was all love songs. It was adult contemporary, and you fit right in, which was great. And, you're doing country as well, right? You're doing country.
Well, I do a lot of different things. When I sit down and pick up an instrument to write a song, I don't think, you know, I'm gonna write a country song today, or I'm going to write a folk song, whatever comes out.
Exactly.
I don't know. I mean, when I come, I'm going to do a Facebook Live thing, I think, but a lot of people are up doing their hits. I'm just going to bring you up into, you know, my little area, and play a bunch of new songs that you haven't heard, or just, I mean, because when I go up, I never practice. I just play. So you're going to get Bach and Beethoven, and then you're going to get bits and pieces of songs or something new that I'm working on. So it's going to be a little bit different.
Well, how old were you when you started playing? And what is your main instrument? You obviously can play several, obviously. So what is your main instrument, and when were you, how old were you when you realized you wanted to be a musician for the rest of your life?
Well, I don't think I ever even thought about being a musician the rest of my life. I was probably going to go into, you know, teaching or something of that nature. And I started off when I was about six playing piano. So my main instrument is piano. That's what I mainly gravitate to. But, I mean, when I came to Nashville, I learned how to really play guitar, because there were people that would just make you want to quit and go home.
Yeah.
So instead of doing that, every time someone played something I didn't know, I just stop them. Say, what'd you just do? Show me how you did it. I want to get there, you know? So I just improved and improved and improved.
Yeah, well, you definitely did. It definitely came out sounding great. So, John, I'm sorry. What did you want to ask, John? I apologize.
Well, you asked my question. I want to know what his main instrument was, because it seems like you, when you play the piano, I was watching a bunch of videos, and it just flows really nice and smooth, and I thought that the piano was really your main instrument.
It was. I mean, I've had a lot of experiences with that. One of the funny stories that kind of comes to mind, because I had Phil Donahue one time. I played a thing, and he said, man, that piano is nothing more than an extension of you. I said, yeah, pretty much. So I was playing with Terry Sylvester from the Hollies and Jimmy Griffin from Bread, and we did a trio thing together. Well, I played a song, just piano, every night for Jimmy, because he had written an Academy Award-winning song for All We Know. The Carpenters did it. Every night, without fail, there was a certain part of that song that I would glitch. I couldn't help it for the life of me. I would practice it. I would go over it. I would study it. And it was fine. The night that I would play it, there's the glitch. And so the last night that we played in Canada, and gee, you know, I'm embarrassed. I'm apologizing to Jimmy, because it kind of throws him off. And so the last night we sat there, and I'm going over it, and I did it. And I said, Jimmy, I have figured it out.
Wow.
Every time I come to this part in the song, for some reason, I don't know why, I look down at the keyboard. That keyboard, those notes all look alike to me. I close my eyes half the time. I never look at that keyboard, but I look at the keyboard and I mess it up. I'm in shock. They all look alike. What do I do now? That night I played it, and it was good. You know, I didn't mess up. And Jimmy just looked. He actually kind of started laughing in the middle of the song. So
wow. Now, are you self-taught? You play by ear?
No, I was classically trained. I had some really qualified, wonderful teachers. That I had one teacher who took me off to the side, and he said, if you will play classical competitions for me, I will show you jazz and rock and roll.
Wow.
So when Dan and I played in the band back in Texas, because that's where we started off together, Dan played saxophone, and I'm kind of learning rock and roll. But we played Beach Boys, and then we graduated to, you know, the soul era with Wilson Pickett and Sam and Dave and that. And then we went to the Young Rascals, and then, you know, to the psychedelic era. We kind of ended up even playing fusion jazz quite a bit.
Wow.
So, I mean, eclectically was the way that I was trained. But in guitar was all self-taught, and then what people, you know, would show me.
Right, right. Now, in the 70s, I mean, like I said, it was all mostly love songs. I mean, you had the disco, too, and everything. So, I mean, you guys, did you feel it was competition back then, or was it pretty much you guys were all – I'm talking other acts, musicians at the time that were on top. Did you feel like there was any competition amongst you guys, or was it a love fest as well as the 70s?
No, it's constant competition. You know, I mean, it's the fastest gun in the West syndrome. You're always looking over your shoulder. Because, again, we traveled with all these groups, Bread in Chicago, King and Seals and Crofts, and, you know, all of these bands. And so you saw their rise, and then you watched their demise.
Right.
We played Three Dog Night in Japan and a couple of other times, And these guys had so many number one hits, and then all of a sudden they break up, and Corey Wells is opening up for Dan and I. So you recognize that there's a certain amount of time that you've got, and it's very ephemeral. You're going to go up today, and you're down tomorrow.
Right. Hey, John, do we have a caller for John?
Yes, we certainly do. We have Patty on the line, and she wants to tell John something. Go ahead, Patty, you're on the line.
Hi,
hey,
I'm
Patty.
Calling from Arizona. I am calling from Arizona, and I just wanted to say thank you for all those beautiful songs. Got me through some rough breakups, got me through some wonderful times with good relationships. But when I saw on Joanne's Facebook page that you were going to be on, oh, my God, broke back. It just flooded me with so many amazing memories, some good, some bad, but mostly great. And hearing your voice, oh, my God, I just have to ask, where did you grow up, your accent? Where did you grow up?
Well, actually, I came from South Africa. I'm kidding. I came from Dallas, Texas.
From where?
Born and raised in Dallas.
Dallas.
Dallas. I lived in Irving.
Are you kidding? Okay.
No, I worked for GE.
What years did you leave?
I left in 1982.
Okay. Okay, I left in 71.
Oh, you're not in Texas anymore, John?
Oh, no. I live in around Nashville, Tennessee area. I lived in Charleston, South Carolina before this, and then California prior to that.
Oh, wow.
Did you ever hang out? Did you ever go to Mother Blues? Maybe we bumped into each other. We're about the same age.
No, I did not. You know, the thing is, by the time that I ended up at the Ruby a lot, because we kind of moved over into the folk music. There was a Lamplighter and Lou Ann's and all those kinds of places. But, I mean, I had some great memories from playing during those days.
Mm.
Dallas was a place that had a lot of music going on in it.
Oh, yeah, well, I had some good years in Texas.
Thank you for your kind words. I really appreciate that.
Oh, you got me through some good times, some bad times, and you lifted me right back up again. Oh, thank you. It just was my pleasure to speak to you.
Nice.
Thank you, Patty, for the call.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Yeah, they were just great songs, and they're just etched in our soundtrack of our lives, you know, all these songs that, you know, a lot of our guests are 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s music. I mean, I don't know if we've had anybody from the 90s yet, have we, John? I don't know. But
I don't think so, no.
Yeah, I mean, just this music is just the soundtrack of our lives. You hear your songs, and everybody remembers where they were, what they were doing, and it was a better time in our lives, and that's why I think the music will never die, because it just takes us back to where we were, and we don't want to forget about that. So and God, the memories you must have around these songs. I mean,
oh, I do.
Changed your life, you know.
It was fun because everything was new, and again, you know, with the number of people that we got to, you know, be introduced to or play with, become friends with. And there was a lot of them, you know, and we run into one another still to this day. I mean, you know, I ran into Richie Puré not too long ago and used to play with him in Poco all the time when he was in that. And you go, my goodness, man, how have you been the last 40 years? What's going on with you? So,
wow, 40 years. Wow.
Yep.
So that's it. Let's say this pandemic is over. Where do we see John Forcoli?
Well, I'm going to be playing a bunch of dates with Ambrosia.
Yeah.
And again, you know, a bunch of those people. Playing with Billy Dean and Tom Worth here in Franklin, Tennessee. If they don't cancel that one or postpone it. You know, it's so funny. They all get this thing, well, we would like to postpone it. And then kind of move it out to here. And I said, don't you dare postpone this thing 2 months down the line. A week ahead, fine. I'm good with that. 2 months, you don't know what's going to happen in a week, okay? And it was so funny. I had one of them, a date that I had in May, and they said, well, we're postponing that date until March of next year. Are you good with that? And I said, you know what? I'm 71 years, and I really applaud your optimism here, you know? It's like, come on, man. Like, I don't know if I'm going to be walking next week. Give
right. I know. That's what I say, too. Oh. I know. God knows. You're going to plan me something out in a couple months from now. I don't even know if I'll see you next week.
You know.
Yeah. What is this Baha'i faith? What, am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah, I've not been involved in that for over 20 years.
Yeah, what was it, and why did
it's a religion.
Why did Dan want to get into that?
Well, Jimmy Seals, his brother, got him into that, and Dash kind of eventually talked me into it. And we taught it, and then, you know, I just got out of it about 28 years later, and went, oh, gosh. So, yeah, I don't really go into that much at all.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I thinking, you know, along the lines of maybe Scientology or how.
It was nothing like Scientology or anything of that nature at all.
No.
It was religious in nature.
Mm.
But again, you know, it's like I was raised Christian and I am still a believer, but I spend probably the vast majority of my time in the synagogues. Most people think I'm Jewish.
Really?
So, yeah, I'm good at that.
Hmm. Well, you're a good old Texas boy, so you got that. You got to have that Christianity in you.
Yeah, you get that in there. But the thing is that I'm a real researcher, so I study a lot. And I'm a history freak, so I want to know why things are the way that they are. And I've read to such an extent that I've discovered I don't know anything whatsoever. So I just kind of float along.
There you go. Excellent. Oh, my God. Well, John, where can folks find out more information about you? I know you said you want to do a Facebook Live. I mean, how can people find out about when and where and where you're going to be playing out?
Well, most of the time, you know, I spend a lot of time on Facebook, and I joke about pie a lot. I don't get into politics or anything else. It's just we just make jokes and laugh. And then so that's John Ford Coley. And
yeah.
Then you can also reach me on my website, which is the brutally handsome and humble John Ford Coley. Okay, I'm joking. It's JohnFordColey.com. And, you know, kind of tells you where I'm going to be and what I'm going to be doing.
Oh, that's good. Good. Well, John, thank you so much for joining us. It's an absolute pleasure. I appreciate it. You were definitely a major influence in my life and musically and listening to you. And I'll never forget your music. And I love when I hear it. I'm a serious fan. So when your music comes on, I never change a channel. So,
well, I tell you what, I so appreciate that because you guys have kept us alive. I mean, even pulling me here and allowing me to talk, I really appreciate that. We had a good time, and I'm very thankful, and I'm very blessed over it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, John, thank you so much. John, do you have anything you want to add?
I just want to tell John that, you know, how much I really appreciate his music, and it's still as fresh as it was when it first came out, when we hear it on the radio now.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, I try to remember Dan. We always talk about Dan when I play. And,
right.
We have a lot of good here, and I don't want him to ever be forgotten. So.
Yeah. Well, rest in peace, Dan, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And excuse me. But thank you, and I appreciate it. And please, when you've got the new music, give us a call and come on back.
I'll come on back now,
you hear?
I'll get the information from you guys from John, and I'll send you the CDs.
Yes, I'll reach out to John. You got
okay.
it. Thank you so much. All right, ladies and gentlemen, John Ford Coley. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, John.
Bye-bye, John. Oh, that was fun. That was fun. A good old Texan boy.
Yeah. Excellent musician, too.
Oh, I know. And like I said, you don't realize, I mean, 70s at the time, I mean, it was full of love songs. It was a lot of rock, too. But I'm talking about the pop stuff on the top 40. I mean, it was all love songs. And they were a staple. They were definitely a staple in the 70s. And even with Seals and Croft, and I mean, I had no idea that they were even related. And so that's pretty cool, too. I mean, and they kind of were in the same vein. Yeah, music-wise, so, I mean, it kind of makes sense. So, I believe we have Mr. Dan Frischmann on the line. Do we, John? Hold on one second. I think the guys are talking.
Yeah,
John?
we got Dan on the line. I was talking to Dan.
I thought you
were.
Hey,
Dan.
Hey, Dan.
Hello, Joanne. Hi, John.
Hi, honey. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good. Yeah, it's my pleasure. It's going nicely.
Well, it took long enough. I've only been asking you for months and months and months.
Ah, yes. Well, you have. And finally, I have at least a small excuse to come on and we'll get which we'll get to, I'm sure.
Yeah, you don't need an excuse to come and hang out with us. Are you kidding me?
Oh,
I love that you're a Jersey boy, Whippany, New Jersey.
Oh, yeah.
I can't believe it. I can't believe you're not Whippany.
Whippany, New Jersey. Morris County, near Morris Town, Livingston, West Orange, you're on it. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, just a little story to start off. I did an episode, like five lines on a Seinfeld. It was an episode called The Mom and Pop Store. I'm in the tag of the show. And the lines happen to be I'm a kid. I found some sneakers and I called Jerry to tell him I found some sneakers at a garage sale because he had lost them. And I say that I was from I found them at a garage sale in Parsippany, New Jersey. Well, Parsippany happens to be the teeny little town right next to my little town of Whippany.
Right.
So I knew Jerry Seinfeld from my stand-up comedy days in the 80s. And I asked him, I said, do you mind if I say Whippany instead of Parsippany? Because my friends will – it'll bother all my friends from Whippany if I say, you know, if I tout the rival town. And he thought about it for a second. He said, Whippany doesn't sound like a town. So, of course, I wasn't going to argue with him. So I said Parsippany. It's still that thing runs on a loop like I Love Lucy now. And sure enough, anytime I visit Whippany, at least somebody says, hey, how come you said Parsippany on Seinfeld?
Right.
Anyway.
Right. You're from Parsippany. Why are you saying Whippany? Yeah. You're from Whippany. Why are you saying Parsippany? What the hell, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, you graduated in 77. So did I.
Oh, no kidding. Where did you graduate from, Joanne?
Well,
I'm
originally from Harrison, New Jersey, and I'm in Clifton now. But I used to work in Whippany. I worked in Whippany over, probably wasn't there when you were there. What was there? Morgan Stanley was a complex there. Oh, geez, I don't even remember. It's been years now.
Oh, yeah.
But Whippany was a nice town. I love Whippany. It's very nice, very nice. So how old were you when you got into Head of the Class and Kenan and Kel? Was Kenan and Kel first? Or I think Kenan and Kel was first, right?
No, that came much later.
Head
of Class 1986. I was already 27 years old when I started playing a high school student on Head of the Class.
That's crazy. You were 27 playing a teenager.
Absolutely. And I got in very late in the going because I think the casting director was already on to me because I'd been around for quite a bit of time.
Mm.
I was not a child actor, but I came out when I was to LA when I was 20. But I was ready for when I went for the callback for the producers and the director. And the first question out of one of the producers' mouths was, how old are you? And I said, 22. And I had the date to back it up. I was all ready with why I was 22. And then, and so whenever actors ask me, I say, oh, lie about your age. Don't worry about it. And,
You didn't look 27 in the show. You did not.
Yeah, that's good. That is a good thing. It was the baby face. It was the
and
the baby face and the bangs. Yeah, there you go.
Right. So Go ahead, honey. I'm sorry. Go.
That's right. I was just going to say that after the 100, we had a party for our 100th episode, and at that point, I felt some job security, and I asked one of the producers. The producers by that time knew how old I was. And I asked the same guy, I said, if I had told you I was 27, would I have gotten the part? And he said, no. So that was a key moment in my life. Yeah.
Good thing your face did not go with the number, right? So
right,
now,
there you go.
Are you still in touch with any of those folks or no? From Head of the Class?
Yes, yeah. Dan Snyder played Dennis, is a good friend of mine. And he hired me twice because he later became he and Brian Robbins worked together. Brian Robbins played Eric on the show. Dan Snyder played my buddy Dennis. They both became very successful producers, creators of TV shows. Dan, kind of became the Norman Lear of children's television when he worked for Nickelodeon. And one of the shows he created and produced was Kenan and Kel. That's why I was on that show.
Great.
And that was years after. That was years after Head of the Class. Yeah.
Right.
So
I'm
in touch with Dan, and then just before this whole blank storm happened with the COVID.
Yeah.
We got together, five of us, for lunch, some of the kids, if you will, from the show. We just got together in Studio City, California, and it was great to see everybody.
Nice. And
we keep in touch. Yeah.
Kenan and Kel, you still in touch with them or no?
Kenan, I see. I saw when I went to SNL that I went. He was gracious enough to give me the VIP treatment at SNL. I lived in New York for 2 years. I got back a little over a year ago, a year and a half ago now. And so I went and visited him there. And he was actually kind of annoyed with me that I didn't let him know I was around sooner. But I just figured he's like, he's got a wife and kids and he's busy with the show. So
Right.
But yeah, it was good to see him. And I sent him some of those magic videos that I'm sure we'll talk about eventually.
Yeah. So now you started as a comedian, or magic was your true love?
I started out as the Great Houdini when I was 8 years old. I did birthday party shows. I was 8 years old doing birthday party shows for 6 year olds.
But you were doing birthday party. You did a couple of famous people's kids, didn't you? Birthday parties.
Well, later on, yes. When I came out to L.A., that was kind of my struggling actor job. Rod Stewart's kid, I think. It was Rod Stewart's. I was at his house. A couple famous people, but I was just doing their kids' birthday party shows, which was it was always fun. I always enjoyed doing it when I was
what we were talking about earlier is. Dan does a YouTube channel, the Great Houdini, and I love what you're doing because not only are you doing the tricks, but you're telling people how they're done, which is pretty cool because magicians don't like to give their secrets. So,
right, most of them I am not giving away. There's just a few. There's just a few.
Not all of them.
Right, I'm just teaching it. I am teaching a few of them. So if any of your listeners want to see it. On YouTube, you can under my name. The channel is under my name, Dan Frischman, FRISCHMAN, or they can just put in Houdini, and they'll get most of them, and then they can go to the channel. Or I just have a website that brings them there. Is Houdini.com, and Houdini is like Houdini, but with Danny, so it's H, not
right.
It's not W H O, it's H O U D A N N Y .com. So if you go to whodanny.com, you'll zap you right to the videos.
Right. Is that the name you used when you were doing the parties, too? Or you've always used Houdini?
Oh, yeah.
How coincidental. Danny. That's so coincidental.
Right.
It works so well. And so now when you're a kid, what are you doing? You're doing magic or you're doing acting when you're in home alone in your room? What are you doing?
When I was a kid, my parents were professionals. My mom was a second grade teacher and dad was a CPA. So there was no one in my family who was in showbiz or knew anybody in showbiz. So I was just having fun. My father put up a mirror on my door so I could stare at my hands while I practiced the tricks. And I'd knock, no matter what anybody was doing, if I was ready with a trick, I'd bust into the bathroom, pick a card, any card, or just so darned excited to to do the tricks for everybody. So yeah, that's what I was doing when most kids were out having fun and having friends. I was in my room working on those magic tricks. Yeah,
that's not. It's a good thing. Look what you're doing now with the magic tricks. You're really good at them too.
Yes.
I love the dancing handkerchief. I never knew how they did that. Now I do, so I could do that with my kids too.
Good. Yes, right.
Yeah,
if you want to know how the dancing handkerchief is done, go to Houdani, HOUDANNY.com.
You got it. Now, you're also a writer and a director. Is there anything we would know that you've written and directed?
Well, I wrote a novel for kids. That was in your local Barnes & Noble for a year or two. Now it's online. It was called Jackson and Jenks, Master Magicians, oddly enough. And I got really nice reviews from Kirkus Reviews and different review places. And I directed for Nickelodeon. I directed some episodes of Sam and Cat, which starred Ariana Grande. And then aside from that, been before this happened, of course, I was directing a lot of theater, I've written three plays, which have been produced at small theaters in Los Angeles.
Nice.
And that's, as long as I'm creative, I'm fulfilled. I feel fulfilled and happy.
Exactly. Right. I got to get it out, you know. What I want to ask you also, how often do you come back to Whippany, a lot or no?
Not anymore. I don't really have family and friends there anymore. So, but last time I was there, I drove through, when I was living in New York, like I mentioned, left a year and a half ago. And it was great to see the old, you know, it's great to see my block. I mean, it's just really, and it looks great. Whippany is one of those places that always, the downtown looks pretty much the same. There's been some changes. I noticed, there was the mainstay Billy's Red Room Bar burned down and the post office is closed, but it looks pretty much the same as it always has. It was a great place to grow up.
Right. Now, how was your experience? I know every town's like that, right? It's like that, you know.
Right.
How was your experience working on Facts of Life with the girls?
Oh yes, yeah. My first thought is that was a long time ago, but I remember it. I remember it well. It was my first big guest spot. So I was Carl Pizza Face Price. They did like a 40-minute makeup job to put acne all over my face, and then I was made fun of. But in the end, of course, I come out on top as the nice guy.
Right.
The nice guy wins in that particular one. But yeah, the girls were great. I briefly dated Mindy Cohn's sister.
Did you?
Pam. Yeah, so which led me to visit the set a few times. In fact, here's a story for you that I'm working on in this period is I'm working on a new memoir. Memoir. I don't have an old one, so a memoir. And one of the stories I'm telling is it was actually during that period because I would go visit the set to say because Mindy's sister was working as a stand-in on the show. So she was working on the show. So I'd visit her at Metro Media Studios, it was then called. I think it's not around anymore. But I'm in the men's room there, and the short kid comes in, and my episode has just aired. And we started talking. He was very effusive about, complimentary about my episode, you were great on it, and blah, blah, blah. And he told me a story of a kid he knew who had a similar story to mine. To my characters on the Facts of Life. And then he said, he said, great to meet you. I got to go. He was an actor. He said, I'm not rehearsing a pilot down the hall, called A Family Ties. And, it was Michael J. Fox.
Right.
And he said, I'm Michael J. Fox. Good to meet you. And he takes off. And then cut to about a year and a half, 2 years, maybe 2 years later, I'm still a struggling actor, and I was at the bar area at the Improvisation Club, the comedy club in Hollywood, And there's an entourage around Michael J. Fox. And at this time, he's just come out in Back to the Future. He is not only a TV star, but he is the number one movie star sensation.
Right.
And I'm thinking, do I go over to him and say hello? Because, you know, well, no, what I say? Remember me from the Men's Room and Metro Media? So I just forgot about it. I'm talking to another guy, another friend. And then there's a tap on my shoulder. I turn around, and it's Michael J. Fox.
Wow.
And he says, and I swear to you, Joanne, this is a quote. He says, hey, remember me? We met in the men's room at Metro Media.
How funny is that? And you didn't want to say that to him, and here he said it to you.
Right, exactly. And he says it to me, and I said, of course, I underplayed it. Of course I remember you, and congratulations on your success. And then he told me this wonderful story. If you want to hear it,
sure, absolutely.
Okay, he said, so what are you doing? He asked me, how are you doing? What's going on? And at that time, I was in a play that was called Bleacher Bums, and it was the longest running play at that time in Los Angeles. It was playing at the Century City Playhouse, and there were maybe I'm going to go with 12 people in the cast, and it ran a lot. It was running so long that sometimes we'd outnumber the audience. But I always loved doing it because I loved acting.
Mm.
However, when he asked me, what are you doing? I poo-pooed it. I said, I'm just doing this little play. Because next to him, of course, I was a pebble. So I'm just doing this little play. Is that the Century play? And he just shakes his head. He goes, no. And he tells me, he says, I'm in a place where I could pick whatever movie I want to do. And then on TV and the spotlight's on me, but you know what? It's the process. It's all about the process. So I used to do little plays too. And the enjoyment of what I do and what you do is still the process. Where do you walk in? Where do you put down the coffee cup? What's the best way to express this feeling or this line? Cause that is the entire enjoyment of it. I mean, it's just like, look at me right now. I have more, there's more money and such. But if you don't enjoy it now, you're not going to enjoy it later. And hopefully, hopefully you'll get some success, and you'll be able to, bask in that for a bit, or whatever. But it's really about the process, and don't forget that, and enjoy what you're doing. Basically, you're saying don't poo-poo what you're doing, because this is what I'm doing is it. So I thanked him, and he left in a kind of a who was that masked man sort of way, and just left me shaking my head.
Wow. Amazing, right?
It was a good lesson. Yeah, it was a very good lesson that I've taken with me and try to tell others.
Nice.
It's about the process. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Well, I've never seen the movie Wacko with that Andrew Dice Clay, the horror comedy that you did.
Well,
what was
you're one of the lucky people. Yeah.
What was the Shalongi singers doing?
Oh,
what did the Shalongi singers sing?
Yes, the Shalongini.
Oh, Shalongini. Pronounced
as well. Right. Well, when I first got out to a little preamble to it is that when I first got out to L.A. For the second year I was in Los Angeles, I was 20 when I was 21. I moved into a house with seven comedians. It was a house that was owned. It was up in the hills behind the Comedy Store on the street, Crest Hill.
Mm.
And my roommates were the likes of Yakov Smirnov, a Russian comedian.
Yeah.
And Andrew Dice Clay was one of my housemates.
Wow.
And Andy was he wasn't misogynistic the character he played. I mean, he was really playing a character in his stand-up act.
Yeah.
But he did have that. But he did talk that way. I mean, he would say he'd have a new girlfriend every couple of weeks, and he'd say, "Fish cakes." He called me fish cakes. He'd go, "Fish cakes. What'd you think of the doll?" And I'd say, "Well, she was nice." And he'd go, "Nice? She's a dish." And so that was Andy. One time he got mad.
Yeah.
His room. He had the maid's quarters off the kitchen. And, we rarely cleaned our dishes and kept the kitchen clean. And he'd have to bring women into the kitchen, into the dirty kitchen. One morning he starts screaming. You just hear it reverberating throughout this stucco, barewood house with seven bedrooms. He yells, the dishes go out the window in 5 minutes. And no one made a move. I was on the phone. And then all of a sudden, you just hear dishes crashing. He threw all the dishes out the window into this brick courtyard.
Oh, my God.
That was kind of funny.
So back to
the Schlangini Singers. One of Andy's first jobs was on this movie called Wacko. And then he needed some backup singers, so he got me and my friend Andrew Lederer, a comedian also, and another guy, to be his backup Schlangini Singers. Anyway, I don't remember too much about it other than we walked behind him and sang Tony Schlangini. And he was like, I am the ta-pa-pa-da-ba. And we go, Tony Schlangini.
John, have you seen the movie, John? It's a horror movie.
No, it was a huge...
It had an amazing cast, but a huge failure, and I don't recommend anyone find it other than as a curio. Some kind.
No, well, John's a horror guy. That's why I thought maybe he might have caught it, and, you know, like on a B-movie or something, you know. So,
well,
yeah,
I make some horrible movies too. So,
yeah, John's a movie director. Well, John's a movie director as well, and he does horror as well. So, yeah.
I have a story for John.
Go ahead.
Before we go.
Go ahead.
Okay. Oh, okay. All right. So back to Andrew Dice Clay. So, one night, we were housemates. But Sam Kinison, before he became famous, was a doorman at the Comedy Store. Mm. And before that, it's fairly widely known that he was a preacher. He was a real life, you know,
Brimstone and evangelist.
Brimstone and what goes with that? Brimstone and fiery.
Yeah,
that's it. Brimstone and fire. Yeah, I guess that's it. Yes, he was a preacher, so he felt he had that he was in touch with the other side. He would talk about on occasion, and I mean, he and I didn't really hang out, but we would hang out in social circles. And we'd have parties at the house, and he'd be there. And one night, the show was ending. It was about 1 a.m. or maybe even 2, and Clay and I are having a drink, and the waitresses are cleaning up the main room, which is the big room at the Comedy Store, about 300. Seats or so. And Sam Kinison comes over to us and he says, you guys got to help me. We're going to have a seance. I got to have a seance. I need you. And of course we just thought he was joking. So we chuckled, but he said, very seriously, I found Steve Lubeckin's ghost. He's up in the rafters. He's up in a closet up near the lighting booth. Well, Steve Lubeckin was a sad story. This is not the funny part of the tale. Was a comedian who unfortunately committed suicide at the Comedy Store, 1979, the year before I got out to Los Angeles. He was involved in a comedian's strike, and then he was told that he couldn't, after the strike was over, Mitzi cut him from the roster. Mitzi is the owner of the Comedy Store, Mitzi Shore.
Yeah.
And he responded by going to the top of the Hyatt Hotel next to the Comedy Store and attempting to dive into the Comedy Store parking lot. I wasn't here yet, but apparently according to the story he missed. But at any rate, now we're back to Kinison telling us about the seance. And so Clay and I go with him. We climb up this little rickety wooden ladder that leads to a crawl space above the main room. And if you go one way, you have to crawl, literally like get on your knees and crawl to get to the lighting booth. And the other direction to the right is just a short little hallway that leads to a closet door that looks like it hasn't been opened since the place was called Ciro's in the 40s and 50s and was owned by the mafia, apparently. I don't know that whole tale, but that's kind of what I was told. So Clay has us, Sam has me and Clay hold hands with him, like in a lineup, and Sam's in front near the door, and Clay and I just started laughing. He says, you guys are gonna laugh, we can't do this. I said, okay, we're just going to try. We're trying to be serious for Sam. And he starts this spiel. He says, Steve, he's talking to like the ghost of Steve Lubetkin. He says, Steve, it's time for your soul to move on. If you can hear, and he goes on for 5 minutes about this whole spiel about moving on and his spirit and comfort and everything. And at the end he goes, if you can hear us, if you're ready to move on, give us a sign.
Mm.
And all I can figure, guys, if it's something that happened on an earthly plane, maybe an aluminum duct gave or something. But all of a sudden we just heard this scary, loud, ominous, sort of like a sound.
Wow.
Just like that, like a rushing, coming from the door.
Wow.
A rushing wind. And the three of us, so Sam included, so it wasn't like a joke on us.
No,
no. Sam was playing. Sam all of a sudden turned white, too. And Clay says, let's go. And the three of us ran. Like this, we ran like the Three Stooges running from the mummy. I mean, literally like cartoony, like we're racing down the ladder. Get your foot out of my face. We'll just keep going.
Yeah.
Right? If you can imagine the three of us, three guys trying to get down a ladder really fast. And we we feel safe enough at the bottom. It's dark. It's 2 a.m. And we just kind of we're kind of embarrassed now. We can't like look at each other.
Right.
And we just kind of nodded. Oh, that happened. And we just went our separate ways. And we never, as a trio, never talked about it again. Never discussed it. However, some years ago, I was getting ready to do a stand-up gig. I haven't done a stand-up gig in many years. But I ran into Clay at the Comedy Store, and somehow somebody knew about it and asked us about it. And so we kind of looked at each other, and we told the story. And our story is corroborated exactly, except that he claims he heard banging coming from behind the door.
Hmm.
And I don't remember the gush sound, so who knows?
Yeah. Some things you can't explain. You just can't explain things.
Exactly.
Well, hopefully you guys freed him that day, and he's no longer haunting the Comedy Store.
Yes. One would hope that at least we helped. Yeah.
Well, guys, I don't know if you haven't seen Dan do his Who Danny tricks, you need to check it out on YouTube. They're really good, and what I love about them too is that you're so cool when you do them. You know, like you're just so relaxed and you're yourself, which is nice. You're not pretending to be anything but yourself, and you're doing these great tricks. And I love when you do reveal some of them, and Yeah, if you want to check it out, go to YouTube and look up Dan Frischman for the great Who Danny. And we're also going to find out more. Go ahead,
right,
Dan.
Either on YouTube, either Who Danny at Home, and Who Danny again is HHOUDANNY, Who Danny at Home, or if you go to whodanny.com, spelled the same way, HOUDANNY, it'll just take you right to my channel. It's another way to go, or just put in my name on YouTube.
Cool.
I'm having a lot of fun with.
Yeah, go ahead, honey, go ahead.
No, that's all. I was just going to say I'm having a lot of fun with those. So thank you. I'm glad you're watching. Thanks.
Oh no, I love them. I love when you put them on. I'm going to start sharing them now when I see them. I'm going to share them with the folks. Yeah. I mean, hey, why don't you come on here? We promote you forever. Are you kidding me?
I appreciate it. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, I want to say thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to speak with you finally. I mean, we've been Facebooking each other for a while, and I'm so glad to finally actually talk to you. And it's been a pleasure having you on. I love a fellow Jerseyan, of course. And we wish you nothing but the best, Dan. And if you have anything going on, you want to come back. Yeah, if you have anything going on, you want to come back and let us know. Just reach out, you know.
Thanks, Joanne. Thanks, John. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Dan. Thank you.
All right, everybody. Dan Frischman. Thank you so much, Dan. Take care, honey. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Dan.
Bye-bye. Bye. Oh, that was nice.
That's great.
Dan. Yeah, you got to check out his tricks, John. I don't know if you've seen them yet, but he taught me how to do the dancing spoon. I got to do it for the kids. I wish I had seen these tricks when the kids were smaller, but, you know. Well, very nice show. Very nice. John Ford Coley was wonderful, and so was Dan. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for joining us, John Ford Coley and actor Dan Frischman. And thank you to our sponsors, of course, the High Bar and Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey, Precious Memory Video in Kintnersville, Pennsylvania, KWV Wines in South Africa, Tees for the Times in Clifton, and Syntech Productions in Lanoka Harbor. It's a studio, music studio, for independent artists, and they're very good. I've actually worked with the owner, and I've done a few songs with him, and very, very good. And you should check it out. The studio's nice and clean and comfortable, relaxing, and you'll really like checking it out. Check out their website. It's syntechproductions.com. So we have a really great show coming up Wednesday, Johnny Boy.
Who do we have on, Joanne?
Well, my calendar, of course, is across the room, but I'm reaching. Okay, we have a really good show. We got Butch Patrick, Eddie Munster from the Munsters. That's going to be cool. Stanley Livingston from My Three Sons. Yep. So that's going to be pretty cool. And we've got an announcement coming soon. We're waiting for the details to come together. But we're going to be doing three new shows coming up soon, once a month, which I think you guys are going to like. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to announce that soon, as soon as we have everything locked in. And Johnny Boy, anything you got to add and anything you want to say to folks?
Well, keeping on with the paranormal type stuff, a very interesting thing. My father gave me this wind-up clock that you have to wind up every 7 days, otherwise it stops working, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's been over a month and a half that I haven't wound the damn thing, and it's absolutely amazing.
And it's still working?
It's still working, like they say. It keeps on ticking.
Wow. Is it a Timex?
Yeah, no, it's an old mantle clock, and it's just the most bizarre thing. I haven't wound it in over a month and a half, almost going on two months. And
meanwhile, your father was doing it every 7 days, right?
Yeah, 3 to 7 days, he told me he would wind it, otherwise it would stop. But this thing just keeps on chugging along, so... Someone's either winding it or it's winding itself. So I'll keep you guys updated on it. But it's very interesting.
Well,
I may have to set up a capper.
Yeah, well, with you and that Ouija board that you have there, who knows what's going on in your house?
I know. Ever since I took that damn thing in, there's been wacko stuff going on.
Yeah, I meant to ask you, what kind of reactions do people give you with your license plate?
Well, I just put it on right before the world ended, so I haven't really driven
Nobody's
it around
seen
much.
It. Nobody's
but,
seen
but
it.
I can find it easy in the parking lot. That's one good thing.
Oh, well, thank God for that, right? I don't know if you guys heard on our prior shows, John has a license plate. It is the picture of a Ouija board. It's so cool.
it's on the front license plate, yeah. It's really my other car has the picture of Bigfoot on it because of my movie Bigfoot Blood Trap, and the Ouija board was going to be for my Demon Board movie, which hopefully will start once everything gets back to the new normal. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, when are you going to start filming that?
Well, the actors are afraid to come out of the house, so we can't do it unless I do it with animation or puppets. I may do it with puppets. a lot less aggravation.
Yeah, you don't have to feed them either.
Yeah. And,
you don't have
and
to pay them or
away.
Feed them. Yeah. Yeah, and then you'll never see them again if you don't want to, right? Oh, that's so funny.
That's right.
But, oh, well. Well, guys, thank you all so very much, and we hope you enjoyed the show. John, thank you as always. You know I love you. And we'll see you guys on Wednesday, the 27th. I can't wait.
Hey, Butch Patrick, Eddie Munster, and Chip from My Three Sons. Excellent.
Yep.
All right,
yep.
Cool. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Take care. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening.